Talofa, Bula, Malo. Welcome to Pacific Rugby Players Radio. All things Pacific Rugby, all things about us. A place where we take time to talk the big and small issues, share stories and have a few laughs with current and past Pacific Rugby players around the world. So whether on the team bus, driving home from training or on the physio table, sit back, chill and dig down deep on the issues that affect us. Pacific Rugby Players. Here's your host for today.
Bula vanaka, everybody. Thank you for joining us today on another PRP podcast. My name's Aidan Clark and we are Pacific Rugby Players delivering you personal development workshops across the world. Today, we have two gentlemen who are joining us who are used to having a whistle in their hands, Glenn Jackson and Chris Pollock. Now, the topic of today is staying in rugby. And first off the bat is the option of becoming a rugby official or referee. Now, this one mightn't appeal to everybody, but I think it's going to be very interesting. In my conversations with referees across the world in the past, especially Chris Pollock, who's a world rugby referee coach, is the opportunity for players to look at this pathway. It's not for everybody, I can recognise that, but there are some out there who have the game understanding, the communication skills, and just the general, I guess, competencies to become a international referee, if not even at lower levels. Now, Glenn's going to have some great experiences because he moved really quick from being a player in Saracens and retiring, I believe it was 2010. And by the end of 2011, he was doing Super Rugby matches as a referee. So clearly, understanding the game as a rugby player held him in good stead for that role. So sit back, enjoy, jump into our workshop here on Zoom, and I'm sure we're going to learn a lot about the life of a referee, the experiences of Glenn Jackson in transition, and the opportunity for anybody out there who want to pursue this.
Morning, everybody. Thanks for joining us. I've personally been pretty excited about this session, bit of a chat to Polly and Jacko. Love having a bit of banter about refereeing. As everybody knows, we've been doing these workshops for Pacific Rugby players across the world. It's a good time for personal development for everybody, and been a huge take up so far. And in the next week or so, we're focusing on staying in rugby. So post-career, doing your transition, what opportunities are there to stay in rugby? And the one that we're talking about today in particular is about officials and refereeing. So thanks for joining us. Jacko, Polly, thanks for coming along.
Awesome. Thanks, Aidan. Thanks for having us, boys and girls. Good to be here.
So just a bit of an intro for those of you who have been in a cave and don't know these two gentlemen. Chris Pollock here. Has been a referee, professional referee for some time. Currently a world rugby consultant, mate. 70 Super Rugby games, I believe, and a couple of World Cups, and possibly about 22 Test matches. And the highlight, possibly we've had talked about this before, is a Lions series in Australia a few years ago now. Jacko, as a rugby player, Bay of Plenty, Chiefs, 60 games, I believe, Māori All Black, and then spent a lot of time in Europe. With Saracens, 130 games between 2004-2010, in which 2010 he then transitioned out and had a fairly quick rise from my perspective around in the referees ranks. Started off with Heartland, moving into, that was in 2010, by 2011 had already had a presence in Super Rugby, and then went on to referee in Six Nations and many Test matches around the world. So two perfect individuals to have here to talk about the opportunity that any rugby player could look at if they were to pursue the refereeing pathway. So, gentlemen, just to start off with, I've got an easy one for you. How's isolation going? And in particular, what have you learned about yourself while in isolation? Polly, we'll start with you.
You know, isolation hasn't been too bad. It's just like just felt like a long off season, really. And probably the biggest thing that I've learned about myself is I'm bloody hard to live with, eh? Because we're used to travelling a truckload. So I think since I've been with my wife for 15 odd years, there's always been periods where you're home for a little bit and then you get to go. Whereas we've been pretty much living in each other's pockets for the last 6-7 weeks. And yeah, I'm pretty difficult to live with, I reckon.
I can imagine. Yeah.
Yeah, I'd imagine that too. Look, it's been pretty good, really. Obviously, with no rugby, and I had a few little roles in rugby. One with a tackle technique, watching in Super Rugby, a little bit of sky work and stuff like that. So to all of a sudden have nothing in terms of, I suppose, everyone involved in footy has been a bit of a shock. But a bit like Polly, great time to be with family. Yeah, with the roles that I've probably had for the last sort of 25 years, never really always at home, but it's been a good 5 weeks with the kids and wife, but shit, I'm over it. Time to move on.
Yep. Like most of the population, I guess. And you sort of alluded there to the fact that, you know, in rugby, everything's pretty much shut down. Pretty uncertain times, which is why this chat is really sort of pertinent at the moment when we're looking at pathways for players post-rugby. To start off with you, Jacko, you're obviously well-recognised amongst players as fairly recently, I'd still say, as a top-level professional rugby player that then moved into refereeing. To kick off, like, tell us about when you first decided to pursue this career and what were the first steps for you?
Yeah, look, it was always something, even when I was playing in New Zealand, that I was a little bit interested in. Bryce Lawrence, I used to flat with, who's a mate of mine who's a referee, sort of understood his roles around, you know, still being involved in the game, still being a professional athlete as such, you know, in terms of being in the game. And after 6 years in England, I was pretty keen to come home. So probably had a couple of years left to me in terms of rugby, in terms of contracts being available. But I think... it was just, you know, being in the game professionally for sort of 12, 13 years, I was looking forward to something that was a more individual sort of aspect of life, and refereeing is that, but it's still been part of the game. So, yeah, the transition was probably, like anything in life and rugby, anything was good luck in terms of good referees in New Zealand moving on. New Zealand took a bit of a risk around it in terms of coming home, but... yeah, the timing was great, but also it was just a chance to really give it a go. And if it didn't work, then obviously God knows what I would have to do then. But, you know, it was certainly a great way to stay in the game. Great decision, really.
Just to unpack that a little bit. So did you have a decision at all around when it came to continuing playing, an opportunity to continue playing, as well as an offer to then take first steps into refereeing? Because actually, like last week, we were talking with Tana and Chris Masui about coaching, and we actually talked about preparing for the change in salary types and things like that, which is a consideration when you move into any career. Did you have any sort of predicaments in that space?
Yeah, I was actually lucky enough because my last year of Saracens, Eddie Jones was the coach then, and he offered me a chance to go to Japan to sort of play a coach at Suntory, and without a word of a lie, it was the biggest contract I'd ever had in rugby. So to forego that into what was a no contract really, it was a chance of earning couple of cents, but with a chance of obviously seeing what I thought is about another 10 years in the game. So it was a big decision, but it was also, I think, you know, when you're a rugby, you know, you're in your rugby career, that I just didn't want to carry on. The body was obviously feeling it after that long, and to have a chance of trying something new that I could see there was a long term in it. There's no doubt about it though, like it was real stressful times, obviously, to leave something that you knew, and to be well paid, and to come home and give something else a go that was a bit risky. But, you know, I think it also made me work pretty hard at it, because, you know, you didn't want to obviously let yourself down around it and the people that trusted you in terms of coming back to New Zealand. So it was a fun first six months, but it was pretty stressful at times as well, until you realise, you know, well, how good people are in refereeing, and most of them want you to succeed and are there to help you.
Yeah, that's considerable sort of sacrifice there. And obviously you played the long game rather than taking the short term, which is not easy. And we might even sort of drill down a bit more about that later, especially the emotions as you do through the transition and not being able to put the boots on and actually tackle someone. Polly, what about for you, mate? How did you get into refereeing?
I played into my mid-20s, so played a bit of club rugby down in Dunedin. Even tried to play a bit of club rugby in Auckland, but when you're about 68, 69 kgs trying to play against some reasonably large men, waking up on a Saturday morning, pretty sore, wasn't great fun. And then, like, I'm a school teacher, and I just I got injured at the beginning of one season, and the referee didn't turn up for our first 15 trial, and someone said, oh, can you do it? I was back running and did it, and just one thing led to another. So I never wanted to be a referee. I always remember growing up thinking referees were looked like just, you know, like that person that couldn't play. So you didn't want to be that person. Yeah. But like Jacko said, like, man, I've got to do some amazing things over my 15-year career, and things that I'd never ever have done. Got to go to places I would never have gone to, and I mean we might talk about it a bit later, but you get to do some opportunities. I reckon that you probably don't even, for some of the players, because there's only one or two of you together in some of these places, and the hospitality and the places you go is pretty amazing. They're always really keen to look after you.
Yeah, for sure, mate. I've always seen you first one at the buffet. But it's all right. It's a referee thing. Jacko, can we just to switch it back a little bit to about that transition, because that's really important for the players that listen to this either today or on the podcast. Those challenges, I'm imagining, because I know, because I did, as soon as you hang the boots up, you're still looking back, checking on the phone, seeing what results, how Sari's going, what was happening in Japan. Like, did you go through those emotions, especially as you had made a conscious decision to pursue refereeing, and you quite rightly said, worked hard at it because you'd made sacrifice. What were the ups and downs of that like? Did you second guess yourself?
Yeah, like I said, probably early doors, you know, you finished and then the season started in Saracens and it started again in Japan, and you're sort of watching it and going, oh, geez, it'd be great to be out there. But I think, you know, that I'd made the decision probably 6 months before I even finished. So I knew that that was going to be my last game at Saracens. So I had that 6 months of understanding, right, it's time to move on and crack into it. And you know, like, I think, like anything, it's successful. You can't really, you then dwell on your decision. You just got to go for it. So I was pretty lucky around that. I mean, we had a really good group of referees that I came into. Obviously, Polly was part of it, but there was some really experienced, good old buggers, you know, that like Vinnie Munro and Keith Brown and people like that, that wasn't a young man's game then. So they sort of helped a lot. That I think probably there was something different in the coming into the squad, someone that had been part of rugby versus being part of refereeing all day long. So they really helped. And you know, I think you'll hear it a lot through this. Like Polly said, the referees do look like quite often just that idiot, you know, that you don't want to talk to. And that's true. Like any team, there's the odd person that, you know, just doesn't quite fit in. But in terms of refereeing, everyone's doing it because they love the game. So there is actually that general, you know, understanding that everyone's actually a pretty decent bugger and they're all there to help you. So that sort of helped in terms of the transition. You know, at times you still also thought that, God, I'd love to have one more year of rugby and playing and stuff like that. But yeah, I think the beauty of it, Aidan, was just probably that that I knew 6 months prior to my last game that was going to be it. So just enjoy the last 6 months of the actual rugby career.
Yeah, nice. What I'm hearing there is obviously mentally preparing for it and sort of winding yourself down in terms of those expectations, which is helpful. Also, you touched a bit on there on camaraderie. So that's something that players often miss the most, is the camaraderie of the boys. What I'm hearing there is that actually you replicated that by having another group of referees who were very similar. And do you think that was helpful for you?
Look, mate, I honestly think it's a bit like it used to be footy, you know, like it's actually a little bit more, it's up to you to get into the game and make the most of it, which it was when I first started playing rugby. One thing I really was getting a little bit sick of rugby, especially when you get a big clubs like Saracens, you know, there's 4 million managers around, you know, there's 6 trainers, 500 coaches, 4 physios, you know, you can't do anything for yourself. And I guess I was at that age where I was like, had started with Waikato, I suppose, back in the NPC days, where you had 2 coaches and a manager, you know, and it was up to the individual as a player to work out, okay, what worked for you. You had the sort of the back of the bus that would run the ship, you know, and that was, I'm not saying that was the right way of rugby, but I mean, I just think it's now a little bit of I was feeling like it was just a bit of an overkill in terms of how much you were as an individual in a team versus what you're doing as a referee. And as a referee, you know, it's all on you. It's all on your shoulders. You know, when you're travelling, you're by yourself, as Polly said, if not with one other. So it's up to you. You go back to these sort of old schools of looking after yourself, really.
You're nice. And I think that part is probably quite appealing for any players who are probably exploring this opportunity. Polly, for those who don't know, you now do some consulting for World Rugby, and what that job looks like is being involved with national teams and various teams actually across the world. I know you're doing lots of different pockets of work in terms of development of coaches and mentoring, but in that World Rugby space, you're working with test teams to improve their on-field discipline, the understanding of the laws and so forth. You and I have had a couple of chats around the transferable skills of players that you sort of that you see as sort of right in your face, but often the player isn't aware of. Now, look, refereeing, to be honest, is not going to be for everybody. I don't know if the Ben Tomiafunas or the Leone Nakawaras are really interested in being a referee, but you have in the past explained to me certain profiles of players which probably, I think your answer is going to be close to what Jacko is, would suit refereeing. Can you tell me a bit more about that?
Yeah, absolutely. In refereeing, there's two pathways that people take. So there's your traditional pathway where they pick up refereeing when they're younger and, you know, like they work through that pathway. And then there's the pathway that the likes of Jacko have forged over the last few years. And the key thing with the pathway that Jacko's gone down is those people already understand the game. And that's the key thing. I think for the guys that are currently playing and are playing at a high level, the biggest thing you bring is game understanding. So if you think about the traditional pathway where someone hasn't played a lot of rugby, they've actually got to learn the game and then they've got to learn refereeing. Whereas the people that come down Jacko's pathway, they already know the game. So all they need to learn is actually the nuances of refereeing. And believe it or not, that's the easy part. Like being able to talk where you got to run, how you got to interact with people, those kind of things actually for the majority of rugby players are pretty straightforward, especially if you're getting guys that are in key decision-making positions. So your 9, your 10, your 7, your 15, those kind of positions, those guys already have those characteristics and those key things that you need to referee. And the fact that they really understand the game, it makes that transition easy. So you alluded to it a little bit earlier, like Jacko basically within 12, 18 months had already passed 99% of referees in New Zealand because he brought to the table a really great game understanding. So, and the other thing is he had really good interactions or good people skills with being a 10. He had to drive people around the field all the time. So, you know, that those things that you do as a referee naturally, he already had. And the other thing that I think by understanding the game really well, like if you think about Jacko, he's standing at 10. He's seen a million rucks unfold. So he can stand there and he understands what's going to happen next intuitively. And that's potentially what a lot of guys that pick up refereeing don't get, and they take 10, 15 years to get, and some never get it. So I can understand why players get really frustrated when someone doesn't have a great playing background because they don't understand the game. They're very good at being able to understand the rule book, but they're just not great at being able to apply it, and that's the difference for me.
Yeah, nice. And Jacko, would you concur with that? Has it helped you out with your rugby knowledge?
Yeah, it is. I mean, you know, it's amazing. You get a lot of players. Is it working all right?
Yeah.
A lot of players sort of talk to me about doing it, and you know, you can tell the ones that are real keen, and I'd suggest those ones. Like it's not an easy role, but you know, I think when I first started, Australian Rugby Union may have asked me a few times to talk to players, and I'd ring them, and they go, "Oh, I wasn't really interested, but I just wanted to know about it." You know, and that's the one you can get in a little bit of trouble. I think, you know, the good thing about when you're a player and you decide you want to do it, that we don't have as a referee group is that you don't have live training. Like, and the good thing I had at Saracens is when forwards were doing scrum sessions or line out sessions or whatever, I knew what I was wanting to do, and they have no problem at a back or someone coming over and calling their scrums, for instance, you know, and as a teammate, I mean, they actually like that and enjoy that. So it's a real, if you understand that, yes, you want to do it, I think the best place is to actually just go and do it at your own training, and that helps their players as well. So that's a good way of really understanding if you want to strive down that way.
Yeah, nice. And Polly, question for you, like, what about the qualifications and the skills? Like, so today online, Matty James, who I actually think will probably be a great referee, he's probably sitting back having listened for good purpose. So as a 10, he's like, okay, this might interest me. So what are next steps? What sort of skills and courses do you need to do?
You don't actually need any qualifications per se. So essentially, you just basically go along to a referee kind of meeting and say, I'm interested in refereeing, and then you get out and do it. And, you know, you just basically are refereeing games, and you'll have someone come along and help you a little bit, but you don't actually have to sit tests or pass things. There's a law exam, and it definitely helps understand the law, but probably from your playing experience, you already understand the law pretty well, and it's just the small subtleties in law that you probably got to get across. It's pretty straightforward.
Just on that, Polly, though, I mean, I started in the UK. There is something in the UK you have to do, just because it covers you for, unlike New Zealand, insurance policies. So someone does get injured. So it's just important if you do start in any sort of grade in the UK, I think there's just a very simple level one type law exam that we do, Polly, that you have to tick off just to cover yourself, because obviously you can be sued and crap over in the UK and stuff like that. So
yeah, sure. That's good to know. So what I'm hearing there, Polly, is actually the pathway is probably a little bit easier than people think. It's probably just about reaching out and showing some interest if there's genuine interest. And then just like yourselves, getting some decent mentors around and looking for an opportunity just to start practicing those skills, right?
Yeah, I mean, like, I think you hit on two really good things there. Like, and Jack had talked about this a bit earlier. Like, if you decide that you are interested in refereeing, a great thing to do is, as you get to near the back end of your career, is if you're injured and you can still run, have a run around with your team. We'll go to their scrum sessions, or go to their line-out sessions, and just see what it's like. And the second point is, try and find someone who's going to help you. Like, I think Jacko would attest to this. Like, if you can get some help with your positioning in the early days, it makes such a massive difference to your transition. Because if you think about playing, you're used to running certain lines as a player, and you got to run different lines as a referee. And that's probably the biggest thing that you got to change initially, is just where you go so you can see the right pitches. And you do that at trainings, you know, like when teams are running around, you can just run around with them. It's easy.
Yeah, nice. So, Jacko, what would a typical week look like for you as a referee? So players will understand exactly what a training week looks like in terms of the mix of strength and conditioning, indoor, outdoor training skills, things like that. What about for you as a referee? And let's say if we were to use a competition week for, say, Super Rugby.
Yeah, just to quickly touch the very first, I suppose, the first year and a half. Like, I just carried on training pretty much as a player. Obviously, I didn't need a hit. Well, I didn't really tackle anyway, so that was all right. But, you know, you didn't have to do any contact stuff. But I just did the same running and same gym work and everything like that. And that actually surprised how much you run backwards as a referee or sideways versus a player. And so then I started having some calf problems early doors, like, which I didn't do as a regular player. So I think that's one thing that's pretty important, is that you actually are running in different directions, you know, compared to a player. You're either going backwards on a good year or forward on a good year. So as a rugby player, but as a ref, you're everywhere. So, you know, just quickly touch on that. There is a bit of extra training in terms of just how you run. But in terms of a Super Rugby week, I mean, the other thing, you know, we don't have home games. So a lot of travel is involved. And especially in Super Rugby, as you know, it's all over the world. I think up in the UK, it's really good because, you know, it's just in there, or France, it's just there. Japan, it's just there. But South Africa, you could be in South Africa for 3-4 weeks at a time. You could be popping over to Australia for the weekend. So Monday, if you've done a game, there's a review system that probably, like any player, would understand, you know, what you've done well, what you could do better, and, you know, what are your work-ons for the next week. So that would be Monday, I suppose, just running through your previous game. Then Tuesday and Wednesday, it's interesting how people prepare. And I think that's the beautiful thing about rugby players is they probably don't need to prepare much on the upcoming teams because, you know, if you're a rugby person with a bit of a rugby nous, you sort of know how they're going to play anyway. And I see a lot of young refs spend a lot of time on this and I don't know if that's the right thing because they're concentrating on something that they think's going to happen. Sure. And as we all know in teams, you know, we're not going to throw out the same game plan week by week. So they tend to watch the week before and think they're going to play like that next week. Well, you know, as you know, as an opposition, you're going to try and change it up anyway. So it's good to understand what teams are doing at scrum time and set piece and stuff like that and who's, you know, what side you want to stand on and things like that. So that's a little bit of work between Tuesday and Wednesday. Again, it's just mixing up your training, I think, during that time. A lot of squash I've been playing now, which is really good for, I reckon, for positioning in terms of changing direction. And it's fun. You know, I just don't like running, so it's fun as well. And then Thursday, I guess, for Super Rugby, you're normally travelling because, you know, like I said, it's always on a plane pretty much. And then Friday. And then sometimes you have coaches that want to talk to you, especially when you're young in your career. Coaches want to talk to you just because they want to know what sort of person you are, whether you understand the game. And again, I think that's where the benefit of a rugby player is. You know, you're not intimidated really by the coach anyway, and you can start just talking rugby with them, and then they're comfortable that, oh, well, okay, this fella's all right. He'll go back to his team. Got a pretty decent bloke today, you know. He mightn't know anything about the breakdown, so let's make that a mess, but at least you know he's a decent bloke and he's going to try. So I think it's really important. Your first meetings as a referee is really important, those first connections either with captains or coaches, and then you're into the game. And, you know, game day will be a big difference for everyone in rugby because normally game day, you know, you're with your mates and talking laughs, cards, you know, having fun, not drinking obviously, but having fun. but as a referee, you know, you're pretty much on your Jack Jones and then you're out there. So it's there's a few changes when it comes close to the game, how much it's just mentally about yourself.
Yeah, nice. I guess, obviously, the credibility that you build up through being a rugby player, coaches will do their homework, players will do their homework on the referee just as much as anybody else. So then you just started to talk about game day. What about fear? So for any player going into any career post-rugby, there's always a bit of uncertainty and fear that holds you back from pursuing something. Now, if someone was asked me to be a referee, straight away I'd think I'd be worried about being vulnerable on game day, being by yourself. I've seen Polly over there warming up, talking to himself, running between cones, and thought, well, that doesn't look very nice to me. but then when the heat goes on and you're out there in the middle you're in the Pacific somewhere and you're having to rush to the tunnel pretty quickly. I can imagine it gets pretty lonely. So how do you go about coping with that?
Yeah, there's no real magic potion around that, I don't think. In terms of a game leading into the game, I mean, I'll finish now, but I was more nervous before any refereeing to any game than I was as a player. And I think I put a lot of pressure on myself to understand that, you know, we've all had that referee that turned up and didn't really want to be there and then ruins your game. And what we know as a player, like if you talk about the New Zealand system, you're playing club footy to hopefully make a Mitre 10 Cup team, you know. So that's your trial to go to the next stage. And then you've got ITM and then you're trying real hard to make the next stage of Super Rugby and then you become a paid athlete, you know. And I understood the pathways like that and there's nothing worse than having a referee that would perhaps do a Super Rugby game and come back to a club game and go, oh, I'm just doing a club game. Well, that club game for that player is the most important thing in the world to go through to the next stage. So, you know, I always put a lot of pressure on myself that it wasn't about, for me, as my performance, it was about hopefully the players get the best chance to perform in their skill. And that was quite a good thing for me to go for because that put a lot of pressure on me to then try and do the best the best you can. And during the game, of course, you're going to make a mistake. And you know, Polly's probably better to answer this because, you know, he's been reffing a lot longer. But, you know, it's about moving on from genuine mistakes that you know. And quite often for me, it was just owning up, you know, like and being vulnerable and saying, look, boy, sorry, I've stuffed up. There's not much more that a player can really say there to you versus a ref that says, no, no, I'm the ref and I'm right, you know, and, you, and you've had those refs before. And but at times, you know, at half time, you're in a bad place because you realise you're not doing the best for this game. But again, that's what makes the challenge of refereeing so enjoyable, that it's an 80-minute slog, really is. I mean, it's a great thing to be in the middle, but it is a tough slog at times, and it's and you haven't got those 14 mates to support you, you know, or pat you on the back to say, you know, mate, don't worry about the drop ball. You know, you miss a knock on and there's no bugger giving you a tap on the back. Don't worry, mate, you'll make a ripper decision in 2 minutes, so she'll be good. So, but it's tough. But you certainly, you know, the more you do it, and as a player, I think sometimes you just get driven into that more top-tier rugby and you make mistakes on TV versus like what Polly would have said, you know, that other way people went through, they made mistakes at kids' rugby and then through to secondary school rugby, you know, so they learn the mistakes earlier.
Yeah, nice. So a bit of accountability there helps, being open and honest. Polly, what's your views on that? You've had a couple of shockers in your time, right on TV. How'd you cope?
Yeah, it's tough. But I assume it's just like when you're playing, you know, like you've got to find strategies to move on. You know, you've got to stay in the moment, because the more you dwell on the past or the future, the next thing you're moving on to just gets compromised. So it's key, you know, and sometimes it's tough, like Jacko alluded to, like when you're refereeing in front of 30,000-40,000 people and you make a hell of a decision and you look up on the big screen, you know you've made a hell of a decision. You know, like she's a tough place to be. But that was one of the things that I enjoyed the most, was like the personal challenge. And it's always different, you know, like every day is different. So, again, it's probably just like playing. It's not going to be for everyone. But if you enjoy a challenge, right, and, you know, you don't mind working hard, refereeing's great fun because you get to do some amazing things.
What you talk about there a couple of times, it's very similar to playing. I think possibly the coping skills of a player who's made an error and has to move on to the next phase, just park it, is probably a skill that would be undervalued and that would be as hugely valuable as a referee in terms of just trying to move on and worry about the next task, which people coming from different backgrounds quite possibly don't have. Just to move on a little bit away from the technical side of it, and early on, Jacko, you talked about opportunity, camaraderie, and Polly, you're always chatting to me about the opportunities within refereeing. This whole thing is about the players being able to stay in the game. So tell us a bit more about the benefits of pursuing this career. There's the travel, which can be good and bad, camaraderie, and possibly starting with you, Polly, it's a question for both, but we'll start with you. Like, what sort of money can a person potentially make through trying to get to the highest level in refereeing?
Yeah, I think there are a couple of places in the world you get paid pretty well. Like in New Zealand, you can earn up to around 200K, which isn't, I mean, I don't know, from a playing perspective, it's probably not as much. But, I mean, if you can finish playing when you're 31, 32, 33, and then you have another 10-year career, earning 200K for a significant amount of that goes pretty well. So financially, it's pretty good. And as we've talked about, there's a lot of travel involved. You get to go to some pretty cool places, get to do some pretty cool things. And I think with refereeing is, because you're your own person for that whole week, you're not locked into a really rigid schedule. So you've got so much flexibility, especially if you end up like somewhere in South Africa. And there's been times where, like, I've been in South Africa and we've been given access to going, staying at private game parks and things like that, which is just, those opportunities just are amazing. You know, you can get out and play golf, do your training. So, yeah, it's a pretty cool lifestyle. And whilst you end up with some, potentially some tough times in the weekend, there's some great perks to it, I reckon.
Yeah, Jacko?
Yeah, and I think obviously what's happening now around the world, who knows how that's going to change in terms of where rugby's at the moment. But there's one thing that is always guaranteed is that games need referees. So, you know, I think it's not a lot of people, as Polly said, get paid to do it. But, you know, if you're doing it from a player's point of view, you're certainly in the gun seat to if there's a place up for grabs in any country. They are definitely wanting more players to get involved and want them to be looked after and well paid if they can. I think the other thing Polly just touched on as well is, you know, when you're away with a team, you know, there's 30, 50 guys around. So it's very hard for someone to open their doors and say, look, come around and, you know, we've got this game park or play golf or something, because, you know, all 50 buggers are trying to run in there and get a freebie. You know, as a referee, you know, that, like Polly said, that's the one thing I notice massively is how many people are willing, because you are a referee, so they feel like they just want to talk to you anyway. They want to know about the game and the opportunities around it. But certainly the other thing I think that I found different from a referee to a player in terms of payment is things like your phone and things like that, you know, like they're normally paid for by the company and stuff like that. So there's a lot of add-ons. So the money's definitely not as good, but there's the little add-ons that you don't get really as a player. So I think that they have good little perks as well.
Yeah, nice.
I think like, to jump in, mate, but also think, like, if you compare potentially coaching and refereeing, there's more scope for you to probably prolong your career compared to coaching. You know, like, if you have a bad run coaching, you're gone pretty quickly, whereas it's probably a bit like, again, a bit like playing. You've probably got a little bit more rope before you hang yourself. So,
yes. Yeah. Oh, definitely. I hear what you're saying there. And we often talk to players about that. It's the go-to for players that are interested in staying in the game, is that often people think that that's only through coaching. And that's the whole purpose of having these types of chats is to explore other opportunities within rugby. And you're quite right. I'm sure you guys in your time have seen plenty of coaches come and go while you've remained. On a slightly lighter note, on those travels, and that both you've been part of in your time. Start with you, Jacko. Who's the most difficult player that you've had to referee? Who's pretty notorious out there for the banter?
Oh, most halfbacks are pretty bloody brutal, eh? You know, like and for good reason. Like, you know, with Aaron Smith and Perenara together are pretty tough work, eh? Like, I mean. Difference, well, the similarities is probably I was, or anyone that's in there, they're just so competitive. So, you know, half the reason is you understand they're having a blow up. But they, most all rugby players just want to have a blow up and get on with it. You know, they can't afford to hold a grudge and carry on. And it's hard for referees to understand that look, this is just a blow up. And, you know, a lot of times you'll get as a referee, oh, why don't you deal with that a bit stronger? And I'm like, because I bet he didn't even know he really did it half the time. You know, you're just letting a bit of bloody dust off, and half the time, especially Aaron Smith would come back 2 minutes later and go, oh, "Shit, sorry, man, I just lost my shit there." You know, like, yeah, he knows. He didn't even need to say anything to him. Perenara is probably a little bit different because he's just the most competitive bloke alive. So. Yeah, but then you get the odd dude that just old school, like Andrew Hoare a few years ago. Just he knew, obviously, I played with him a few times, and I was trying to tell him how to scrum, and he's like, "Mate, you're a freaking 10. Piss off out there." No, I was like, "Oh, fair enough. You're right. What am I trying to tell you?" So I had nothing. So yeah, it's good when you get the odd good bit of banter as well at times.
Yeah, and I guess that makes it more enjoyable as well. Polly, what about for you?
Yeah, 100%. I reckon the banter's can actually be one of the best parts about it in the 80 minutes. Like if you build reasonable relationships with our players, some of that stuff can be gold, you know. So for me, all those people Jacko mentioned were tough at times, but also great fun. Ali Williams was an interesting cat to referee. And probably the worst person I had to deal with was a guy called Steve Devine. Typical nine mate, he just would not let go. And he was probably someone I didn't have a great relationship with just because I had never really met him off the field very much. So he was just into me the whole time. But in the last couple of years, with what I've been doing, I reckon Josh Matavisi would have been a nightmare to referee. Yeah? Like just at trainings, he's just chipping away. I reckon he'd just be gobbling off the whole time.
Yeah. Is there, across both of your careers, any particular incidents that were more interesting than others or funnier than others, either out on the field or back in the changing rooms?
Jacko?
Yeah, look, you know, we've had a few coaches come in and give us a proper serve. A couple of coaches you've just talked about, they've sort of lost their shit a bit. And that's pretty interesting because you're like, oh, what are you doing, man? And they'll probably realise afterwards, what the hell were I doing? Because, yeah, you know, it's just not on, you know. I think, well, you know, there's some really witty and good people, as we all know. Alan Wynne-Jones, I was coaching, reffing Wales. And their 10, oh, I forgot his name now. But he was mouthing off big time, and it was, I think it was Wales Island. It was a close game, and I sort of called Alan Wynne-Jones over, saying, "Mate, your 10's just out of control." And he goes, "Yeah, I know, mate. He's just a young Glenn Jackson." And then, like on live, I'm trying to be serious, and then I just couldn't stop laughing, like pretty much the whole line out. You know, it's just so I'm trying to be the man here, and he's just giving me something, and I've just lost my shit and started laughing. And I was just like, well, that's embarrassing on anything. So, you know, it's, like I said, you sort of finish this game, and you remember probably most rugby stories are not even to do with the game, you know. So it's pretty much the same as your refereeing stories are probably most about banter and stuff off the field, and you know, how good this game is to being for everyone.
Yeah, nice. Just thinking about in particular, I've seen a question coming at you, and this is sort of along the same wavelength as I was going to ask. Polly, probably firstly to you, Pacific Island referees across the world, like, is there genuine opportunity and in your belief for someone to put their hand up, hopefully more than one, and sort of how does that happen sort of through the Pacific?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I reckon there's scope for someone, like, there's a hole in refereeing from the Pacific Islands. So I think World Rugby would love to have someone representing that part of the world, the region. So they battled to produce referees at the moment. Like, the traditional pathway, for whatever reason, just hasn't been working that well for the Pacific Islands. Yep. So if they could find someone that would go down the come out of the player path, I reckon their opportunities would be massive, because World Rugby want to have someone in that space, so they might get pushed a little bit earlier. Yeah, so definitely. And in terms of starting it, the key thing would be, depending on where they are, like exactly like what Jacko did, is to probably start with them. If you're overseas, start over there, and then reach out to potentially you, and then can pass it through to me, who I can then pass it to the key people within World Rugby.
Yeah, perfect. It's perfect. And Jacko, like, how many full-time refs are there in New Zealand, or part-time professionals? Like, how does that structure work? What's the opportunity there?
Yeah, I think at the peak we had 7, which was probably a good number. I mean, like I said, though, I mean, not all unions are making money at the moment, so it's become a little bit tighter. I think New Zealand's now down to 5. That will be full-time. So to be full-time, you have to be doing Super Rugby, and then obviously Test Rugby. So you really want to be pushing into Test Rugby to be full-time. And then there's about probably 10 to 12 in a national squad that would get paid to do Mitre 10 Cup. And they possibly could be on a, depending where they sit, they'd be on a retainer as well. Okay. So, and then match fees just for every other sort of semi-professional, professional game they're involved in. Now, that could be also ARing for Super Rugby, so you get paid for that. So, you know, there is plenty of little roles around that you can get involved in. Another thing is probably, you know, there's also TMOing, which gets paid, and I think we've got 4 involved in that have always just been referee people. So there's no reason why I would think one day a player could just maybe not be able to run around as much, but then put his name up to TMO, because I think that's pretty important for, I reckon, to have a bit of a player nous around that as well, because they do a lot of help now with referees on the field. And Polly probably mentioned it, but there's also 7s, which is a massive one, I think, for especially for the PI, you know, like in terms of how good they are on the 7 circuit and getting involved in that first, because then you also get paid for tournaments there. And it's a really good way, especially, I reckon, as a player, just to get that feel, because you don't make as many decisions as you do as 7s. I think Richard Horton, I don't know if you know him, but the old boy who played at Saracens, really wanted to get in the role of being a referee. and he's got on the seven circuit pretty easily in terms of where he got. So that's the other role that you can also look at getting involved in.
Oh, excellent, excellent. I think that probably gives, on both perspectives, a good sort of roadmap for any player that's interested. Before we start to wind it down, I don't want to keep you guys too long. I'm not sure if you can comment or not, but I would be wasting the opportunity to chat about cards, yellow and red. Now, last year, or well, I think it was last year, jeepers, we've been stuck in March for about 4 years. We almost had a ruin from a spectator's perspective. You could say that we had a World Cup that was almost ruined by cards and people being sent off. Now, since then, lots of people ask about what is the very best system. We often talk about rugby league. They'll cite somebody and then the punishment may come later when you look at different evidence without affecting the game on hand. Do you guys have any opinions of where that should sit, where it should head, and possibly even an update of what's currently been the standard for refereeing?
Yeah, I'll just tap in quickly, Polly, and then you finish up with the real stuff. Okay, the primary role, I suppose, of a referee is safety, and that's where we got to. Now, I'm totally not agreeing that what we did is right, because I don't believe what some things that happen is unsafe. And that's a bit of a frustration, probably a good reason why I'm have retired now from refereeing. But, I mean, you know, I just think, if we're talking to the people we've got in terms of New Zealanders and Pacific Islanders, you know, we love the game because we're hitting people and hitting them hard. And quite often down here, it's talked about as an unsafe way of tackling or things. So that's where the real change came around the cards. And I just don't think that has changed. You know, like you bring something to change to try and change how the game's played. And I'm not sure that I see old Harley Teepole down there where he'd be in bloody heaps of trouble these days. But, you know, that's what that's where the change came in the World Cup. And it sort of got brought on pretty quickly, you know, in terms of even for referees, because we get told what to do and you'll get told what to do as a referee, and then how the players then accept it or understand it even before we go out in the game. That's where it came. So I think a good way would have been, okay, this is what we're doing, but then we can't be punishing games by sending people off. So for me, a red card for me is someone's bloody stood up and knocked someone out, you know, with a good old punch, and yep. Then we can deal with other things off the field. It's probably my opinion, but the idea of the referee is to try and keep everyone safe, and I think there's a lot of things, especially at scrum time, which we do well and trying to do that. I just don't know about who's actually getting concussed when we get making these tackles at times. It's not often actually the bloke with the ball. So, you know, are we actually protecting the game as well as we should be?
Yeah, nice. Polly?
Yeah, well, I quite tend to agree with Jacko. Look, I think what happened last year at the World Cup wasn't great. Just got brought in too late. But the reality is nothing's going to change in that space. They're going to keep pushing down there. For me, the change that I'd love to see is if someone gets red carded for a kind of tackle like that, that they basically, off the field, they can be replaced. Versus a red card for someone stomping or some real blatant act of thuggery. Mate, if someone does that, they're gone and that's the end of their team. But whereas, like, someone can get their tackle technique slightly wrong and that ruins the game of footy. So if they're going to keep it that standard, that's fine. But I just think we don't want to end up ruining a game of footy 3, 4, 5 minutes in because someone slightly got their tackle technique wrong.
I think... Well, personally, I think you're spot on, because we've got, you know, people paying good money for a test ticket or for a ticket to any match, who are arriving and then it's basically over after 15 minutes and it hasn't been an act of foul play. So we'll sort of see how that one unfolds. To finish off with, I probably just changing direction from where I was thinking I was going to head. I guess, you know, people have multiple careers throughout their lifetimes. Jacko is a player, then a referee. Probably what I want to ask you next is, you know, what's next for you? And Polly, also for yourself, you know, so you're probably a bit slower off the mark in the last sort of years, other than heading to the buffet. So what's next for you in your next chapter? But we'll go back to Jacko first. Mate, what are you thinking that you might do after you've, you know, not running around with a whistle?
Well, I was lucky enough to coach the Bay Under 19s last year, and we have a Jock Hobbs tournament here, like under 19 tournament, and just absolutely loved it. So, yeah, I love the game, and I'd love to stay involved and hopefully get into a bit of coaching in terms of where that leads. I don't know. I think it was, as I said right at the beginning, it was probably an opportunity when instead of playing, going straight into coaching, and we've all seen those people, you know, it's pretty tough, I think, for a player just to go directly into a coaching role and get it 100% right. And as Polly said, you have a couple of bit of a bad run, then you're pretty quickly on your scooter. So I think this sort of break and doing what I've done in terms of refereeing, hopefully can lead into something still in the game. So, yeah, that would be the ideal. At the moment, I'm supervising kiwi fruit picking. So it's in betweens at the moment. So we'll see how we go. Hopefully rugby starts again soon.
Oh, excellent. Excellent. Try something different. Polly, what about for you, mate? What's next?
I have been obviously involved with world rugby, did a little bit with Uni Rugby, but with what's happened in the last 5 weeks, I've probably reassessed what I'm doing. I'm looking at going back teaching. So
yeah, you've been a teacher for a long time, so that's always in your back pocket, right?
Yeah, I had 10 years teaching before I became a professional referee, and then I went back for a couple of years post, and I think I'll probably end up back teaching, and that'll be it.
But also, would it be fair to say that if you decide not to, that within the career path that you've chosen, both of you actually for refereeing, if you want to keep working through the ranks, keep consulting, keep mentoring, you can.
100%. I mean, it's just where the world's at the moment. You know, like I think rugby's going to be, affected for probably another 18 months when you think about international travel and stuff like that. So it makes the role that I've been currently doing a bit difficult. So in the interim, I'll go back, and I'm lucky I've got teaching to fall back on, and then. When it comes right again, I'll probably see where we're at.
Yeah, awesome. Well, man, been a pleasure to have you. Two great blokes, two very, very highest level referees who have sort of given up their time to share a few lessons and experiences. I know this will be valuable not only for the people who have jumped on this morning or tonight, but we've got plenty of people downloading the podcast. So thanks very much for your time. Any last words from yourselves?
Thanks. It's obviously just a good chance to talk to everyone around it. We're involved in the game because we all love it. And I think to touch on base, I think there's a real opportunity for Pacific Islanders in terms of getting into refereeing. I really, really think it's something that's missing massively. Hopefully with the new appointment of Bill Boenbond again, and, you know, I mean, they're pushing for the second tier and especially Pacific Island teams to get places, and I think it's good for people wanting to get in refereeing as well.
Yeah, excellent. And thanks for making the effort to join us, team. Everybody online, we've got our next workshop later in this week is about staying in rugby again as a team manager. So we've got Darren Shand who's going to join us, and I'm really looking forward to that chat as well. And make sure you tune into the podcast and listen to all our other workshops we have in the last couple of weeks. Men, thank you very much. Have a great day. And everybody out there, we'll see you on another POP workshop later in the week.
Awesome.
Cheers, guys.
Peace.
Thanks for joining us on today's show. Check out PacificRugbyPlayers.com and follow us on Facebook, Instagram and Twitter to stay on top of all news relating to Pacific Rugby Players and to find out when we drop our next episode of PRP Radio.